How are we? Welcome back to the Inside Trail. Today I'm joined by Charlie Butler and Brian O'Mahony, the founders of Tribe. I've worked with Tribe through the triathlon I did with Tom during the summer, and also through the blog post and about raising awareness and mental health, and I really love what they do. But Brian did like four marathons in 24 hours, like 100 miles in the one go, which I think is fucking outrageous. But really, really excited to hear how we got on and stuff like that. Just a nice catch up with them. It's nice to do a podcast after the summer because I haven't, obviously only did one when I was away, but I have a couple now booked for the next, you know, 2-3 weeks. So hopefully we can get back to banging them out. Other than that, I hope you enjoy. Well, welcome back. Gentlemen, are we ready?
We are.
Ba-da-ba-ba! Oh, unreal. That's how you start your Sunday.
That's how you get a hungover Sunday.
Now, lads, how are we?
Not too shabby.
Good. How are we getting on?
Yeah, very good.
All recovered.
Charlie, it's been a while since we've spoke. And Brian, it's great to have you on the podcast. I actually can't wait for people to hear your story and what you've been doing. So to start... Okay, I know the last time you were here we spoke about Tribe, but you had only just launched it, or it was just about to be launched.
Yeah, it was about a week or two from launch, which is a bit mad now.
Yeah, and so, but you're creeping up on a big figure.
We are. Mm. Yeah, we are close to 40,000 raised.
Yeah.
In what, 5 months? Which started out very much as an idea, a thought, and now we have like 1,400 people part of this community we call Tribe, and probably have done 15, 20 events, ranging from all different types of things. And the goal is 50k, and who knows what the goal will be after that. You know how these things turn out, even with your cycling. You start with one goal, and you realise the power of people come together.
I hope so.
Gonna try and hit 50 by the end of the year, and then see where it goes.
Funny experience as well, because I remember when we were having our first meetings with Pieta House, we were saying, oh, we've all these plans for Tribe, we're gonna have this online fundraiser for you guys and everything. And we were saying the goal to them as well, 50 grand. But we really, at the time, had no idea of like how we were going to go about doing it. Mm. And it just, like, as we kept going, just eventually just started falling into place. Mm. Just like
the most amazing thing about the 40 grand race so far is that it's not loads of rich people giving tens that like thousands of donations.
Yeah.
It is 5 euros and 10 euros. And that's the thing I'm most proud of. I would love to see the amount of donors. Like, I'll tell you, it's in the thousands.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because, like, people are giving 2, 3, like, whether we 3 euro donations from, they all add up.
Mm.
Like, and that's the best thing. It's like students who are broke and they're like, you know what, like, I'm actually going to give a 5 euro. And that's far more powerful than, you know, all the big corporates throwing, like, tens of thousands. Obviously, everything goes to the amazing cause, but that's what I love so much about the fundraising that we've done.
And then, so your most recent fundraiser, I feel like we're just going to get balls deep in this way, but like,
rightfully so.
For those of you who don't know, Brian ran 4 marathons in 24 hours. It's 100 miles.
100 miles,
100 miles.
160 kilometers.
Without stopping. Now, I don't know anyone out there who isn't a runner. Like, I can barely run, like, you know, 5K without stopping, and you know, 100 miles.
Yeah.
100 miles. So, like, how does one even, like, why did you pick that?
Well, I mean, it was a build up to it. So, like, I kind of heard about these things, like these ultra marathons people were doing, like 2-3 years ago. And it was always the type of thing where I was like, I'm never going to be one of those people. Like, it was like incomprehensible. It's like when someone says like the size of the sun, you can't really like comprehend the actual... I was like, they're way out of my league. I'm never going to be one of those people. And then in 2017, we did our first marathon. I thought I wasn't even going to ever do a marathon, but obviously did all that, went very well. Then did my second one last year, then just kept progressing. I did then a marathon and a half in April in the Connor Marathon. So I was like 64 kilometers. And in the back of my head, I was like, it wasn't even like the personal satisfaction of getting 100 miles done. It was more just like the metaphor represented of like getting over something that you just don't think you can accomplish.
Yeah.
Like just the achieving something that a while ago you thought was just well beyond anything you're ever going to be able to accomplish. And so I bought the ticket in like February.
I remember when you bought that fucking ticket.
I bought the ticket, I sent the screenshot to Charlie, and you're immediately like, you're a gobshite.
Bond's the type of person, if you want him to do something, just tell him you can't. Like, I know that's just like a cliche, it's a bit, but like genuinely, like I remember like if you say anything to Bomb, and like that's what I remember, even like everyone saying, oh, please don't do any more runs, like now that it's finished. And like Bomb knows there's going to be something lunatic type thing that he's going to do in the next few years. It's not going to be running, but it's going to be like he's going to fucking run Everest or like he's going to do something ridiculous that is, it's just how you are. And I think the metaphor is what it's all about. And in your blog post, I think how he articulated that was one of the most moving things I've ever read.
Yeah.
It was incredibly powerful. So
on your blog post, I feel like when you write something like that, you get like your perspective on it. People read it, but I feel like when you actually speak about it, like properly, you can get a completely different, more of an understanding as to how someone feels or how it went through. So like with your blog post, was there like, that came out just after you did your 100 miles. So it's kind of about the 100 miles, but a lot more. So like what was the big thing when you were sitting down to write that post that you were like, obviously you have your personal stuff within that, but what was the thing that you wanted people to read being like, oh, that's why? So that's a very hard question.
No, it was more, and like it's a good one. I mean, that was always the question I got when I was doing this. They're like, why would you put yourself through that? They're always like, there's other ways to raise money for charity. Like, you can do a bake sale. Like, you don't have to put yourself through this. Like, I mean, there's a million and one ways you can raise money for charity. And for me, like, nobody understood, because I obviously never explained it to anyone, my real reason for doing it. And like, there was a message behind it anyway. It was for me anyway, the overcoming something that, as I was saying earlier, you just don't feel like you can. And there's a huge thing in, for people who do ultras, there's a huge technique. Well, I don't know if you can call it technique, but they always say never look at the end result. So if you're 20 miles in of a 100 mile marathon, all you think about is the next mile, and then the next mile after that, the next mile after that. Because if you think about the whole massive entire journey, you, like, your brain starts crumbling. Your willpower starts crumbling. You're just like, I'm not gonna be able to do this. So it's just the one step at a time message. And then for me, it was me trying to do that to be like, to people for any field in life. Just, you don't, doesn't matter what you're going through, if you're going through mental health difficulties, if you're going through stress, if you're trying to do these exams, you'll never feel like you're going to accomplish it. It can be applied to anything that's difficult. Just keep going in the right direction. Don't look at the massive 100-mile journey. And that was kind of like, it was my inspiration for hopefully mates of mine, people I know who are going through difficult times. Just like, if I can get through this, so can you. Just like, just got to approach it this way, just keep putting one foot in
the way. You articulated though, is like, for anyone like knows Brian, like he is the most selfless person ever. Like he just is, and everyone like, oh, most people who do those 100 miles, like they're doing it for themselves.
The ego
like,
thing.
It's like, not even an ego thing, but even the, it's like such a personal drive, and it's like, this is my Everest, I'm going to conquer it. I could not comprehend how it was not like that for Brian. I was in the car behind him. Every donation, every message we got on the page, everything, rolled down the window, piss and rain, Bomb, another 20 quid, or like Bomb, message from whoever.
Yeah.
And you, that frail skeleton rocking along would just give the most, like the warmest thumbs up back to me. Like it was completely that, is that like he, at the end of his blog post, how he articulated, I think was so powerful. It was just like, I'm doing this for you. Mm-hmm. And you, as you said, is not only any person, but in any situation, you know, like, and I think that was the real power of it, that it could be applied to so many different things.
Definitely.
And it wasn't speaking to like me or to some of our friends individually, it was speaking to everyone, and I think that's why it had such good reception.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. The 100 mile itself though, it was,
and can I ask though, like,
insane.
I like, At what mile were you like, what the fuck have I got myself into?
Mile two.
It was like, I think it was the whole, this was different from any marathon I've done before. So I've done like three marathons, an ultra, and then I did this. And in all three, four of them, you hear the concept of people say, like, you hit the wall. And for me, there was always a set point where things turned really shit.
Mm.
Like, for, like, my first marathon was kilometer 30. I remember it very well. Things, my legs just felt so heavy. I was breathing real heavy. Everything was going to shit. My second one, it was kilometer 15 because I was trying to do it so much quicker.
Mm.
And the rest of it was shocking. For this, it was, because I'd obviously done so much training, like I was doing marathons on a daily basis, I'd obviously built up a lot more endurance. So the first marathon was okay. I actually felt enjoyed the first half marathon. Like, yeah. The scenery and everything's unreal.
It wasn't raining that much then either.
Then for the second half marathon in, I was like starting to get a bit iffy.
Is that luck going
about? Yeah. No, it was not a bit quite. Before that. And then from the third half marathon, during that whole period, I gradually just progressed into the wall. I was just, by the end of it, I was like
horrible.
In a horrible place. And I was talking to one person who was an experienced ultra runner who'd done this actually five times.
John Moore.
This guy, lovely look. And he was saying, look, you're going to start, like, this is a tough thing to go through mentally, and you're going to start breaking. Like, you're going to start snapping at your crew, you're going to be in a horrible mood, all of that. Just like, he was saying to Charlie, beware of that, he's going to get into this. And I was like, you don't know me, like, I don't really, that doesn't happen to me. Like, I was completely naive.
I
knew
me and Brian about a fight.
But no, I remember during the third half marathon, I had to turn back to the crew. I was like, look, I'm going to go into a dark place at the moment. Mm. Like, I'm going to start snapping and everything. I'm going to apologize to you in advance.
There's one moment in particular I really remember. When it was like 2 a.m. It was like pitch black. And like, there's pitch black in like somewhere like Dublin, and then there's pitch black in somewhere like Connemara. Yeah. Where, like, you could only see 5 meters ahead of you. And it started raining at 9 a.m. and did not stop till he finished. And I remember it was about 2 a.m. And I knew Brian did not want to talk to anyone. Like, I knew you did not want to talk to anyone. And I remember, I knew you saying to me before, he's just going to have to go to this place. And I got out of the car and I went up to him. And I had, like, Panadol, I had a Lucozade, and I had 4 different things that might be able to help. But, like, at that stage, like, nothing else. And I went up to him and I was like, do you want any of these? He was just like, no. And I just said, all I said to him, I was just like, Brian, we talked about this before, you have to go to one place. I just said, go there. And I went back to the car. I didn't say anything, because there's nothing you can do as a crew then. It was literally just like, go to the darkest place and finish this. Because he knew, you know, even just reminding him what he was doing it for, he knew in his head, I knew he had the capability to go to that place.
Yeah.
So like, you can't say anything. Like, it was just brutal watching it.
Oh yeah. No, it was rough. It was just 16 hours at least. Sorry, more, probably 18, 19 of just like, extreme shit. It was horrible. It was just legs feeling so heavy. And it's also like, you take breaks, there's checkpoints along the way, so there's 3 of them, and we stopped about 15 minutes in each one.
Yeah, probably breaks a little bit
more. Yeah, so because you have to eat, like, and I remember, but in between them you're just running for like 5 hour periods, like non-stop, and you're the whole time is just pain. So you're just like, and you can understand how if you just you and your thoughts, and then your whole body just feels shit. Eventually, you start going into this real depressed mood. Mm. You're just in this like horrible, angry state, and keep going. And eventually, you arrive at the checkpoint, and we're trying to get food. And then Charlie and Ellen are all chirpy and stuff, and I'm just not at their level. I'm just like, just leave me alone, please.
You do your best, though. Like, I tried, because we had so long that, like, I tried everything. You know, you try the angry, you try the like, relatable sad, you try the happy, like, you try every type of mood that might give them something.
And nothing.
Like, so it works. The checkpoints worked. Like, I left the checkpoints feeling, like, in a better mood than when I went in.
It's hard to get going again after the checkpoint, especially when you've had
That's what I was always worried about.
You're stopping, you eat, and then you're like, oh, have another fucking 3 marathons to run, bollocks.
Or like, it's like 4 p.m. you've been running for like, oh, like whatever it is, 10 hours, and you're like, oh class, I have another 14 to go.
Man.
Yeah, I remember it, like, and the worst part probably in the entire thing was, I think it was 9 o'clock, so I started at 6 in the morning, really, and it was 9 p.m. at night, and we just, like, there's this bit in the middle, it's a figure of 8 loop the entire course, and the middle bit you go through twice, obviously. It's called Loch Lomond Valley. And though I hated that part. That stretch, I just, for some reason,
you'll never go back.
Despised that part of the journey. And I was just getting through it the second time, and I had arrived at the bottom. And in my head, because like you start getting delirious at that point, like you're like completely gone. I'd slept like four hours in the last 72 hours. I'd slept four because I was so nervous and stuff. And then obviously 10 hours into the race, like I couldn't really eat anymore. I was like throwing up everything that was coming up. I was like dry heaving anyway, so I just didn't want to eat. So I couldn't eat for the last like 16. So when your brain's in that state, you start like seeing things that aren't there. I was getting like dizzy. I was really nauseous and stuff. And for some reason, I convinced myself in my head at 9 p.m. that I had 3 hours left of running. I was like, just 3 hours. I didn't. For some reason,
be the deliverer bad news. for some reason,
in my head, it didn't add up that I actually was finishing at 6 a.m. I thought I was finishing at 12. I don't know why. I don't know why. So I was like, kind of happy. I was like, I only have this tiny little stretch. And we stopped at the bottom of Loch Ina Valley. And then Ellen was like, Brian, you're going to have to eat. And I was like, no, like, I'm grand. I can get through this bit, last bit without eating, because I just didn't. It was felt so bad trying to force feed yourself when you feel so sick. And she was like, no, you've got 9 hours still to go. Like, you're not going to be able to survive.
And like, his face was just like, oh. I was there like buttering bread trying to get food into him. And he was like, it was literally like trying to feed a toddler. Because he was like, I'm not eating. And I was there like buttering about it. Butter, Brian? You have butter? No, plain. I'd be like, right, butter. Yeah, didn't like it anyway. Like, throw it away, get another piece of bread. And like, try and get food into your Lucozade or anything. Because you could see him, there was parts where like he was going really well, but it was because he was hallucinating. Like, there was this bit of run, and I was watching in the car, and I was like, he's teetering to the left, you know, teetering back to the right. You can see he's genuinely like completely out of it. So my fear was that because it was piss and rain, and that the roads are kind of like, they're not great. Like, if he takes a slip, he's out of the race. Whereas I knew if he just stayed on his feet, he was going to finish. So that's why we were so stressed to try and get him to eat, because like, you know, if he starts seeing things and falling off the road, then that's when it gets real scary, you know, because you're just driving behind him and you're just watching him kind of sway.
I feel like once you lose your ability to actually run, that's when you're like, hey, this is kind of fucking scary.
Because like, then you
as a crew as well, you have to, you obviously you have to have his duty of care in mind as well.
And you know, for the crew, they were like, you mandatory experienced crew, ultra marathon runners. Like, they, because there's medics, you need first aid equipment, there's people with like boiling water in the cars. We showed up with like hunky dories, Lucozades, you know, like one or two monsters for us. Like, not even like we were so wildly unprepared, but like very committed. So we're like,
I saw that on the thing after I was. But I think it was like a month before as well. It was like experienced crew is mandatory and absolutely necessary. It said in the booklet that we got. And I was like, I have two people who like never crewed before. So I was like,
At that stage, we only had one. So on the it was just me, and we're like, I need someone else. I can't like drive for 24 hours and sort of thing. So like, I literally was like onto my girlfriend, like, can you take a half day and work? Like, we need someone to come down. And she was going to go down to Wexford and have a lovely weekend. And I was like, we need you here. Yeah. I think I lied to her. I think I said that he would finish around 12. I was like, you'll get it. It was like, 6 a.m. And she ended up running like over 30 kilometers alongside.
She gave us a massive dig out.
Like, but, like, we had no crew. Like, we weren't prepared at all. All we knew was that we were just putting Brian on a road and letting him run 100 miles.
And you also jumped on and did a little bit with Brian.
For a few reasons. For sitting in a car for 24 hours. We can never moan about it because you can't when you're watching him run. Yeah, but like, it was actually nice. I remember one stage I went up to Brian, I was like, oh, I actually feel like a run, when he was like 60 miles in and he looked at me and he was like,
shut the fuck up.
But no, a bit of running, and then also it's nice to keep him company. As he said, he took out music at like mile 50 or 60.
Yeah.
So you get sick of music. Chatting to him, take his mind off it. And then also just, it's nice to set the pace again as well. Sometimes we just kind of ran beside him or walked beside him. So for a few reasons, it's kind of, it was good. Like, I felt we had a good, like, kind of, we got a real like system by the end of it.
Yeah. The company was massive.
Yeah.
I remember at one point, I think it was around mile 40. I was in a real bad state, and I was just coming back to the end of like the first part. The first time I'd gone through Loch Ina Valley, and I remember at that point I was like not in good form at all. I was like tearing up. I actually probably was crying for a little bit.
You were crying for one.
I was just running along, and then this other lad from Cork, he was running as well. He didn't notice I was in a bad state at all, but he started getting chatting with me, and he was like, oh, your first time as well? I was like, yeah, no, it is. And he was like, oh yeah, me too. He was like, I'm in bad shape at the moment, but I'm just gonna like follow behind you for a bit just to keep me on track, like keep me pacing and stuff. I was like that. Fuck's sake! Like, I don't want to have to, like, because you have it in your head. Like, I have to keep this guy going. Yeah. And but it was probably one of the best things going to happen to me because
that got a second win, gave it a little drive.
That's probably a tenth win, but you got it. I remember, I was going
for the next 12 miles.
That was the worst part of the weather. It was torrential rain. Like, oh my! I can't get over how bad the weather was. And they said that after. But then there was the other company. Remember the two blokes walking home from a night out in Roundstone? Hilarious. It was like two or three a.m. and it was like final checkpoint. And Bomb was, he had some food, so he was walking the next kind of like few kilometers until he got up to speed again. And I was driving behind, and these two fellas in like the worst like flare chinos, you know, like round like gilet rocking in after a few pints, they just start joining them. Ah, Jesus, lad, you're doing the 100 miles, chatting away to man. Me and Ellen were like, no, this is the worst thing ever. But it took his mind off for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Get your brain just working on something else.
Yeah.
That was so funny, those lads.
They're good, yeah.
Another thing, so in terms of training for this, like how much were you running a day before? Because remember you were doing other running bits beforehand.
Yeah.
Like, so how do you even train for this?
It was, I went through multiple different training plans anyway for this one, but it was like a nice build up in that. From January to the actual 100 miler in August, I had the Connemara Ultra and the Cork Marathon in between.
Oh, yeah.
So they were nice to just keep me going.
Yeah.
I was training normally for both of them. So I was doing like, just training as if I was trying to do a quick marathon for those two. And after the Cork Marathon finished, slightly before, training really ramped up.
Yeah.
So like, to keep into people's perspective, like for someone training for a marathon, if they did a 10k, like this, it's the same ratio for me as doing a marathon, like that day in training.
Yeah.
So like there was parts in June where when I was peaking in my training, I was doing marathons at a daily basis.
A marathon a day.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, as he was saying there, it's like if you're doing a 10k,
yeah.
the marathon, like he had to run so much. I remember because we would work all day on bounce, like the thing we were doing during the summer, and it would be like 8 p.m. after like 12 hours in the office, and he'd be like, oh.
After
run for
3 hours. I have to go run a marathon.
I was doing it on a daily basis. I was doing it about 4 or 5 a week. So I was around.
That's insane. Fucking mad.
It's fucking insane. I like. Oh my god.
Like I was thinking about doing like one marathon eventually.
I've done one. They're awful. I really hope I don't do one again. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't because I'm like injured and stuff. But like it was awful. And like I trained for like 8-9 weeks and barely got through it.
Yeah.
So like the level of fitness and like mental toughness, I was thinking. When we met John Boyle, who was the guy who did the 100 miler 5 times, there was a flick in my mind because he was like, this is 70% mental.
Yeah, that's what he said to me.
70%. He was like training. Okay, like obviously you have to train like a shit ton. But like even in training and everything, he was like, it's all between the ears. Yeah. You know, like it is everything between the ears. Because as you say, you're fighting with your personal, you battle your thoughts, everything 100%. The whole time. So
yeah, that was great. That meeting with him was really big for me. Because I was real anxious that I hadn't done enough coming up to it. I was like, oh, this is my first time trying it. A lot of people drop out and everything. And so he's just sat me down. He was like, look, it's about 20% training, 10%
nutrition,
and then 70% mental. It's just like,
He was a looper, though.
I feel like, though, if you have someone like that who, you know, has done it, and they obviously have certain ways that they could give you tips, that, and if they think you can do it, I feel like you just have to believe in yourself.
But peace of mind, it was probably your biggest bullet in your
gun. It was complete
peace of mind you had then, because you were like, okay, I know I can do it.
Yeah.
And that is more powerful than any marathon you probably ran in training. Like,
it was nice just being like, because I was real anxious in the lead up. I thought I wasn't doing enough up until the point we met John.
You were in a good form.
And like, what was good was from then on, I was relaxed just from what he said to me. And that was massive for when I actually showed up on the day, because I wasn't stressed out or anything.
Yeah.
Whereas if I hadn't met him and I kept going the way I was, I probably would have been a lot more burnt out by the time I arrived at the start line. But
it would have been even rougher if that was possible.
But the people who run that thing are a different breed of human. So like, I'm not one of them.
Yourself.
Definitely. No, I'm not. I don't consider myself like.
He was by far the most sane. The lads in there.
These people are
terrifying.
There's people who had the logo for the Connemara 100 tattooed on them. And the previous race times, like, on them and stuff. And they're all like, but like, these people do it like as their fix. So I was doing this because like, I was trying to like help out my mates and try raise money for charity and all that. These people, like, they actually enjoy
thing, like,
yeah, don't raise money like,
actually like, enjoy this thing. A lot of them travel the world just doing these ultras all over the world.
That's mental.
And they're all like to me afterwards, like, oh, see you next year. And I was like, no, I was like, I don't want to see you or this place ever again.
Yeah. Oh, like, he's never going back to Connemara. He's like PTSD from Connemara. Like.
But like, they're different. Like, and I remember from meeting John, who was giving us all this advice beforehand. They're like, their brains just fix differently. And like, you could see from just talking to him for a while, he's like a very successful solicitor. And you're like, I can tell why.
Yeah, like, they say that down there. They view the 100 mile, the people who run that 100 miler, like, as they're on this pedestal that no one else can reach. It's really interesting. Not in a, but like in a very like positive way. It's so lovely. They're just like, if you can do this, like, you know, you're one, like, obviously, like, a great person, but your mental strength is just beyond anyone. Right. Like, even in, like, a career and everything, they were saying that, the person who we were saying the B&B with, like, she was just, like, in awe of Bond, like, the whole weekend and stuff, in a real nice way, a real pleasant way of, like...
I still don't think I'm one of them, to be fair. No, like, I mean, I remember talking to John, and I was like... you're the last person I would ever want working on a course. I know, like, he'd just be relentlessly working to figure out how he's going to destroy you.
Yeah.
It's just, like, that mentality to just keep going.
First and last for you, Bob, anyway. We're
that definitely
that
lasts, like, until...
What, is there... I feel like this is something... I feel like you like testing that boundary of what you can do. So, like, what is there? Is there something else? Is there, like... I feel like you've ticked...
Don't give him any ideas.
But I just wondered, is there any ideas that are in your head already? Is there anything else that they'd like to do? Because I feel like you're like, you seem like the eyes just can't believe you fucking did that, but like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, from my point of view as well, is like, it doesn't have to be athletic, because like,
yeah,
I feel you just have, once you have something in your mind, something that someone either tells you there's no way you can fucking do that, to something that is so, as you say, so hard. And like, I've seen that with the startup we're doing. Like,
yeah,
Brian is like, once he finished the 100 miler, like, he is tunnel vision on, like, I'm going to bleed for this company that we're going to try and set up. And like, it's a sort of mentality that it doesn't have to be running. So I'd say, like, even in the last few weeks, like, he just puts his mind to something and he was just like, I'm going to give it all. And for a reason that, like, you know, like, you could never be like, I didn't give it everything, you know? And like, no matter what happens with the startup, I think if that fails, then Bob will do something else. It might be physical, it might be business, or it might be something, but I think...
Just for context on that, do you want to give a brief explanation as to what the company does?
Do you want to do the elevator pitch?
Yeah, I'm not going to bore it. It's, we've created a company called Bounce, or Bounce Insights, and we're launching in a lot of universities in the next few weeks. It's actually launching next week in Trinity. It's a consumer insights platform and a feedback software. Long story short, we effectively... are paying people for their feedback. We're providing a direct link from brands to these consumers, kind of 18 to 25 year olds. Really short, easy bundles, we call them, because people hate surveys. We're really not trying to be like surveys. And we're launching in universities and gathering feedback. So that's effectively what it is, in a really bad explanation. You would think after 9 months of working on it, it would be better.
No, that's pretty good. But just like how you're, you know, doing an app and doing Tribe, you're very proactive in trying to build shit. Like,
well, here's the thing, like, Bounce has taken up a lot of our time. Like, we spent like 9 months working on it, and like, we've gotten it to a good stage. Like, we just started like being revenue generating there last week and stuff, and happy with the progress of that. But then Tribe is funny in that it doesn't require a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
It's like, as we were saying, it's just like, we went into it and we launched it without much of a plan, but it's just like, you just start doing these small building blocks every day. Like, it doesn't take a massive amount of hours every day.
No.
It's just like, these small like efforts, just a post every now and then, like somebody setting up a event for certain people, like every now and then. It's like, probably like two years.
Yeah, it's funny.
Like,
there is like the, like an awe of like, oh, like Tribe has been so successful and so it's been amazing, but like, it's a self fulfilling prophecy effectively, where we've had people like, you've come to us, you've done an event with us.
Yeah.
We've had loads of people come to us and do these things where all it was is we had an idea. We had kind of a building block of, okay, when I did the podcast with Molly Parsons, it was like, okay, this is something that needs to be done. There needs to be something that makes people our age in our group feel like it's okay to talk about this sort of stuff. It was very like cliche, but it was like, look, we'll just, this is our lash at trying to make it better. And it's gotten, it's grown so much, but it, as you say, it doesn't require that much of our effort. It's something that we love doing. And to be honest, it's a break from Bounce.
Yeah.
It's something that takes our mind off it. And brings people together and we see our mates with it, and it's so enjoyable that like it really is not stressful or hard work at all. Like, it's something that just
grows. One of the things that I really like about Tribe is this blog post that you did, because I feel like the raising money and, you know, doing events and stuff and like raising awareness, I think is fantastic, but I feel like the blog posts give, you know, that individual insight into how someone actually felt. And like I don't know, when I was writing mine, I felt like it was like I was really letting someone see what it's like in here.
It's giving someone a voice to a platform of people that are almost looking to hear a voice.
Just on something so specific like that, that like, you know, I always found that like anything else that I hear men talking about, they're like 30, 35, 40, and they're very rare. You know, like, what's his name? Brezzy,
yeah.
You know, but he's a lot older with a lot more life experience and wisdom and stuff like that, whereas I really, really like the fact that people our age, like yourself, myself, are actually just starting to, like, being dead honest, and I never thought I'd openly say this, like, literally, about 3 days ago, I gave myself a panic attack just from fucking getting worked up about something that just wasn't even, and, like, proper, I was proper, like, I didn't even think it at the time, then the next day, I was like, my girlfriend, I was like, I had a panic attack last night, and then she's like, yeah, I know, I didn't want to say it, but yeah, you did, and, like, that was the first time I'd ever had one, and I proper shook me, but then, I'm like, why should I feel any less of me just because I had that one little thing that made me feel like
It's a self-awareness more so, as you say, like people who are older have more wisdom and stuff, but the earlier you can start that self-awareness, and to be honest, I wish I had it when I was like 15, 16. It comes with maturity and stuff, but it's something that like people need to start working on and help improving themselves, and like the blog posts are just a way to kind of, as you say, a view into other people's backgrounds, because people are like, oh, Tribe, oh yeah, you run marathons and raise money. And what we wanted it to be is, like, no matter what people's background or journey, that they got given a voice. So whether it was, like, I know we are in a kind of bubble, but we try to have, like, you know, your background is so different to them, Brian's, and then one of the, like, Deirdre or Edie or any of our, we try and get a diverse background. So whether it's, like, climate anxiety or it's, like, sports injuries or, you know, we try and get a voice to those sort of people, because the more you read about it and hear about it, the more you feel comfortable talking about it yourself. Yeah. And it takes so long to break down that wall, but like any small step is better, I think.
I think that getting comfortable talking about it yourself is the big thing about it for me as well. Because I think, like, obviously it's hard for people to come out with their own experiences or tell other people if they're going through mental health difficulties, because there's obviously such a taboo around it. But then, like, if you see people you know or like your mates putting their story out there, it obviously makes it a lot easier for you to then come out. And like, I remember people saying it to me when we first started doing the blog posts, and said when you did your podcast and stuff, like, it makes it easier for me to come out with my own story. And I never really understood it, because it never properly happened to me. And then I think Deirdre never did her blog post a while ago. It was brilliant, and that reading that actually was what then led for me to come out with my own one. Like, I mean, it was like seeing someone like Deirdre was always this like incredibly charismatic, happy-go-lucky girl who, like, I looked at in a lot of ways. Like, I wish I had some of her personality characteristics. And then she's, like, associated herself with this. Just made it so much easier for me to do it.
So much easier. So Collie as well.
Yeah, Collie, yeah.
Collie's post is just amazing. Like, the way people can articulate their emotions when they put time to it is just amazing. Mm. Like, the way people articulate how they feel makes it so much easier for other people. And to be honest, as a friend, and I talk about this a lot with Danny, our mate, is that, like, as a friend, then it helps you understand everyone's, you know, how you might be feeling, and then it helps you be a better friend and improves your emotional intelligence.
Definitely.
So as mental health, as we talk about it, it involves everyone, like 100%, whether I'm not struggling at the moment, but it then helps me be a better friend to Brian, that I may kind of understand maybe why he's feeling this way. And then I'm another friend, you know, by reading people's stories, you get a better battle-hardened kind of thought process on how people deal with their anxieties and their emotions and why they might be off one day. And it then helps you be a better friend. And then that's just as involved with mental health, because, you know, what are you? You're the sum of the five people around you or whatever it is. You know, it's a group thing always that makes it better. So
I feel like the emotional intelligence, as you said, I feel like that is so key, is that like, especially for like young people, is just building up that emotional intelligence and like learning to read people's emotions and learning to express your own properly and deal with the ones that are coming out. And because like for years, like I know, like, there's so many of my friends now who wouldn't have told me a year and a half ago that they, you know, have anxiety, have been seeing a counsellor, having done X, Y, and Z. And, like, it's... Well, I just find it fucking bizarre that it's only after you... that someone says something that, you know, three more people are like, oh yeah, I'm the same.
It's so weird. And I think I said it on the last podcast, but after I did the podcast on Molly Parton's, I didn't go a night out for a year without someone coming up.
And telling me,
and I was like, what the? What's going on with all of our mates? You know, like, and it's not like what's going on is in like, oh my God, everyone is struggling so much. No one talks about it. No one talks about it. It's like, to me, it is so foreign because... I started talking when I was probably one or two, and I haven't stopped.
Yeah, I know.
But it's just changing what we talk about, and it being normal is just such a bizarre thing. And it's so cliche to be like, oh, you know, talk, and talk's going to fix everything. It doesn't fix everything. No,
it's a start.
But it's a start, and it's an enabling arm then to focus more personally on your mental health or your friends, you know, like devoting more time to like making sure Brian's okay or someone else is okay is what's important there. Like it's, 100%. Yeah, as you say, it's completely foreign to me now because I've realised... Now, how many more people talk about it? Even just in our group circle, like Colly Caldwell, I didn't know. A lad in our year, like I had no idea. And then, like we were working together, he came over to us and he was just like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna do this blog post." And he talked about his story, and I was just like,
"Yeah,
why didn't I know this when I was 16?" Well written. But yeah, it just makes the whole thing a lot easier. It takes a lot of weight off shoulders.
Yeah, but like you know, I think the way you have gone about and what you've done in the last couple of months is fucking insane. Between, you know, the actual things you've done, but also just getting it out there. Because, I see more and more people with the blog post and, the Instagram grows a little bit more.
Yeah.
A new group of people do an event, and it just spreads. And I just realize, I feel like it's definitely something that has been long overdue, and I feel like what you're doing is...
Well, like, there's a lot of shit out there, and I'm glad that something, like, it is something good that's spreading. Like, it's something that... I'm not proud of many things, but it's one of the things that I'm like proud to be a part of. If I saw it for the first time, I would like to think that I would want to be part of it.
Yeah.
Because as we say, we don't work hard at it. It's something that we really cherish doing. And every single time we get a follower or someone messages us or someone want to do something with us, I'm like, it just gets that warm feeling where you're like, we're doing something good here. And as we say, me and Brian try... It's hard when Brian was doing Orange Minor, but like we try to remove ourselves as much as we can.
Yeah.
It's not about us at all. No. Like it's really about every single person that does something with us. It just makes us feel great. And I know out there at the moment that today Connor Curley's doing the 70.3.
Yeah.
He's raising money for his mum who passed away, and Matthew Boyle as well. And these are people who we've talked to in the past, and they're doing all these things. And they've reached out to us about fundraising, all this stuff. It's not even about for a tribe that they're fundraising for, but it's just, I love having a community of people who are like proactive and doing great things and, you know, like putting themselves out there. I think that's just the best thing about it. Like.
100%. I agree. Yeah. I figure we better go on to our segment a little bit. How's that sound?
Yeah, yeah. Sounds good.
Also,
before we go on, I want to say for the future, we are almost at 40.
Oh, yeah.
Our goal for the year is 50,000. We have a few events coming up in colleges and those sort of things. We always say, if you have any ideas, if you have anything to do that you might think we'll be doing, if it's a bake sale to 100 miles, we would love to chat to you and make it happen.
Yeah.
We're not good at many things. We're good at organising and getting stuff done. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have an idea and you're like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to plan this or get people to go, we'll look after that. One of the big things, it's been a few years since someone's done it. We've had someone approach us. There is something coming in November, which is hopefully going to be our big event that's going to take us over the 50. It is going to be a boxing charity fight night. We're in the very early stages of organising it. It's going to be huge. We're going to try and make it as big. We've sponsors lined up. So if you want to bait the head off anyone for a good cause, reach out to us. We're going to start planning fights.
Tom DeYoung, you're called out, mate.
Yeah. I think we have one brewing there already. But anyway,
so, right.
Yeah.
Here's the 50 grand.
100%. So do you want to start off with life hacks or jokes?
Why don't we do life hack first?
Okay, life hack.
Go on.
Do you want to start your life hack?
Yeah, so I noticed one of your life hacks in one of the previous podcasts was the Revolut metal card.
Mm.
And one thing that was shown to me recently by one of the lads from Bounce, actually, was, this is a bit of a dirty trick, but anyway, the Revolut had this thing called a disposable card. So what you get is you have this card where every time you do a transaction on it, it destroys the card and generates a new one. So you have all new card figures and everything.
Golden boy bomb. Yeah. So plug in the system.
So like it's to stop, the reason for that is this is try stop like online scamming. So if you buy something, they can't keep charging your account or something. It's a new details. So what he showed me was like you have all these companies that offer free online or trials, so subscriptions. Yeah. So Netflix do a month, Spotify do a month. You can get Deliveroo Premium for so free deliveries, all that. If you put in your card details for the first thing, you can get a free trial for the month. And then when they try to charge you again, it won't work. But then you can put in the new generated card details.
And
you
get another one. And
you keep getting...
Everyone's
like, oh,
he's so nice.
Oh, he's
so nice.
He's so nice.
He's charity. I don't even have the card myself.
Yeah.
I thought it was a funny
I just heard about it.
I just heard about it. Yeah, that was good as you think.
Like, I'm definitely trying that now in New Zealand. Have you a live act?
I don't really, but I would say... with a plug, life hack for anyone in Trinity or DCU over the next few weeks, we have a load of free coffees and other stuff to give out on Bounce. So yeah. Everyone hates paying for coffees. It's real annoying. They're like $3.50. We'll be giving loads of them for
2 minutes of your time. Like if you go onto the app and you do, it's actually 2 minutes, so, probably less. You'll get a free coffee.
I suppose
coffee
that's my real poor life hack, but I know what it's like spending a load of money on coffees. We'll be giving out loads of them for free over the next few weeks. So keep an eye on when we're launching and hopefully we can help you out.
Oh, yeah. My life hack is for anyone looking to upskill themselves, like computers or anything like that. The easiest way is to just go onto YouTube and look it up. Like,
Oh man, it's insane.
There's so much like how to X on such software, and there's just some fella who just does like a voiceover the whole thing.
Literally.
And you can literally learn it.
That's what you've been doing all summer.
Yeah.
Photoshop.
You'd swear he's like a graphic design student now when he's literally just taught himself it through YouTube. If you want
to. You're probably doing a Premiere Pro, right?
Final Cut Pro as
well. Yeah, you can just teach yourself anything.
Yeah, man, but like it's so, I feel like something like that's like, how do you learn to make videos? Or how do you learn to do that? It's like, it's not that hard. You just have to like what would, you know, a videographer do? Well, they would do this, and then just, there you go.
Jokes. You're going first.
Come on. Why do you never see hippos hiding in trees?
I don't know.
Because they're very good at it. Jesus.
That's so bad. I was thinking, am I the stupid one or is that just terrible?
God,
right.
That's shocking. You have to have one of those anyway.
Yeah, they're always going to be a shit one.
It's almost the lack of effort.
Do you want
to? Alright, this one is credit to my brother in New York, and I feel this is a joke that made me laugh with 6 points in me a bit more, but I'll go for it anyway. So, there were three nuns from Derry, and they were devout Catholics. Their whole life they grew up together and worshipped Catholicism, did everything they could by the book, and unfortunately they had a tragic car crash when they were in their late teens, and they got to the gates of heaven and they said, God was like, you know what, you were amazing, you never slept with any man, you devoted yourself to Catholicism, and so I'm going to reincarnate you as someone from the past. You can be anyone you want. And the first nun comes up and said, I'd love to be Mary Magdalene. I want to go back. And said, absolutely, bang, go back. And the next nun goes up and said, thank you so much, Father. I want to go back. I want to go back as Mother Teresa. She's like, brilliant. And the third nun comes up and she goes up and says, I want to go back as Sarah Piplini. And the guy said, yeah, of course. I haven't heard of Sarah Piplini. And she was like, no. And she has a newspaper article and it reads, Sahara Pipeline laid by 10,000 men in 7 days.
Oh, that was good. That was good. I like that.
That was good.
See, now my joke, I'm just going to what do you get when two giraffes collide? A giraffe jam. Oh, like there's no real
life. You say them so softly.
They
glide in. You have they just a light, nice little laugh. They're very even when you tell the real dark ones, they're so soft.
I feel like if you say them pleasantly, they're not that dark. You know.
Yeah.
So the way we're gonna do the trivia today is,
God,
we're gonna do one for one. You do rock paper scissors to see who starts, and then if you get it wrong, you can jump in and guess. But you only get 0.5 if you're robbing one.
Otherwise, all right,
go.
Okay, so rock, paper, scissors, see who goes first.
Rock never loses.
Rock, paper,
scissors.
Would you do the rock, paper, scissors?
Okay, so rock, paper, scissors, and then you go on shoot, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so
rock,
paper, scissors.
Rock never loses.
Okay.
It's only going to move after.
I'm going to do shocking this.
Okay, so. And these are kind of hard, but like, fuck it.
Ah, great.
What is the second highest mountain in Africa?
The second?
Yeah.
So what, it was Kilimanjaro the first, so...
I think... Okay. Oh, wait,
who's
I have to go.
Yeah,
to go first.
Yeah.
Second highest.
Yeah.
I'm not getting this. Is there a hint? Can you even give us what?
I feel like if he's gonna try and rob it, I'm gonna give you a hint.
Is it K2? Is that a mountain?
It's Mount Kenya.
No, I wouldn't have got that. K2, imagine, because you give it a hint about what country it's in. You know when you get a thought in your head, you're like, I know it, and then I just stuck to it, I don't know why I thought it was. Okay,
so Charlie, where is the Barbary Coast located?
Barbary Coast?
Yeah.
The... I'm going to go somewhere in the Caribbean.
No. Brian?
Probably going to go... I don't think it's Italy. I'm going to go something like Brazil.
Africa.
You're going with the double Africa.
Look, it's just the way the... Yeah.
Africa was such a big guess as well. Not even whereabouts.
North Africa. Okay, Brian, back to you. What element's melting point is -7 degrees? Okay.
The mic is back on now,
so I'll sort that. So one sec. Okay, and then I'll... Okay, so, apologies about that. Camera died, but mid-trivia, which is kind of unfortunate, but we're back, and we're still on the law. Okay, so, the question I'd ask you was, what element's melting point is -7.2 degrees?
I'm going to have a guess at Mercury, but I know it's in thermometers, so minus, going solid at -7 is probably a bit useless, but...
Yeah, no, it's not. Charlie, would you like to have a guess at it? Hey, I know you want to be on the podcast, but come on, get out. Out.
I don't even want to embarrass myself, I guess.
I mean, that's hard. That is hard, bro.
I didn't even know that was an element.
So this is Charlie then, right? What team established a record by reaching the Super Bowl 4 years in a row without winning any of them? So they got the Super Bowl 4 years in a row, didn't win.
Oh, and didn't win.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Like, I don't even... You probably have a better idea of this than me.
It's weird for...
Oh, Jesus. Is the Bears a team? Oh, I don't even know. Like, Jay, I don't even follow American football. Not a clue.
Do I try and steal?
I'm going to guess and say... The Seahawks?
No, the Bills.
Bills. No, fucking Bills. Like, didn't even know they were a team.
How many matches does the final of ice hockey, baseball, and basketball consist of?
Sorry, say that again. How many matches does the final?
Does that make sense? How many matches?
So is it like, you know, in basketball, the two teams that get to the end, they play like 7, I think? And it's the best out of 7, I think.
Oh, that's what it means.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the answer, yeah.
Oh, seven. Sweet.
Sweet.
Cool.
7?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah. First one on the board.
I'm surprised I knew that as well.
Okay, Charlie, what does ET stand for?
Extraterrestrial.
Yeah. There's one on.
On the board. On the board.
Okay, Brian, what is the most populated city in Brazil?
Oh, okay. Is it Rio or...
Whichever one you go for, I'm going for the other.
I'm gonna go for Rio.
Sao Paulo.
Fuck!
Yes!
Shit!
Sao Paulo. So you're just done. 1.5 to 1.
Oh no!
Okay, Charlie, which German city is famous for the perfume it produces?
Wait, is it German city?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Charlie, you know this.
Yeah. What?
Perfume.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, lads, I'm looking like stupid.
I feel like it's only obvious if you know the city, I suppose.
Yeah, it's very true.
Oh, it's like a small, tiny city, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
What's he saying that now?
No, I don't know.
One, you know. What, Cologne?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
1.5 each. Okay.
Oh, that's so stupid.
How many dots are there on 2 dice?
Oh, this is just a maths thing now. So it's like 6 plus 5 plus 4 plus 3 plus 2 plus 1.
Yeah.
What the fuck is this now?
Should I add a timer on that or something?
So
alright, I'll give you 15 seconds.
What the fuck is going on? So three. It was 3-6. I got it.
Yeah.
14, 15.
Should have been 21. Buzzer
question. So 42. That should 42. Be a should be a buzzer question. 42. Yeah, 42.
So 2 points.
Which star wrong, sign is represented by a dragon?
What? I just wanted to say Jack, so I zip it down.
Pisces.
Wait, sorry, what dragon?
Which star sign is represented by a dragon? And you said
Pisces.
Not Pisces.
Pisces, I don't even know most of them.
That's what I was thinking.
I'm not great at star signs either.
It's like Cancer, Tarot, or like.
I hope it's not my one, and then I should have known that.
I have no idea, man.
Aries?
Aries.
I didn't even know that.
I'm Capricorn, I think.
Wait, who's questioning me on that, Brian? It's you again, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is the largest ocean in the world?
Oh, come on.
I'm going to guess between the Pacific or Atlantic. It's probably wrong as well. Largest ocean? Pacific?
Yeah.
Pacific.
Charlie, how many squares are there on a chessboard?
144?
Oh. Not 12
by
12? 64.
That's only
8
by
8.
Yeah.
I
thought it was
12. Okay, Brian. What currency do they use in Croatia?
Oh my god, we should know. We went to Croatia.
Yeah.
I'm not going to guess it. Oh, what is it?
Was it crowns or something? No.
Clothes.
Oh, this is really annoying me.
I'm real stupid today.
That's Sunday after
every
a few
day.
Pints.
Yeah, Sunday after a few pints.
Sorry, this is my one.
Yeah.
I don't know, I don't think I should get it if I guess like crowds or something that was close. Nah.
No. Probably. Charlie?
It's a fucking decade, isn't it? Or something like that.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think crowns is one of the greatest countries.
Yeah, it was one of them.
I think it was Prague or whatever.
Whereas Florence was Budapest, isn't it? No, I don't know. Damn.
Kuna.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
Right, so what he's both on now?
Oh, like 3.5 to 2.5 or something, or 1.5. I don't even know. I actually think he's well ahead.
I think I was 1 or 2.5 or something. I think
no,
I
you're 3.5 because you got
you're
3.5
and you're.
I'm only 1.5.
Two.
How many are left?
We we'll
probably should track this.
There's one. Yeah, I'll do it a bit. There's one more each, and then the music one, right?
All
right. So, who did the last one?
I did.
You did, so it's me. What is the basket under a hot air balloon called?
Oh, come on.
I'll give you a clue.
Is this Claire or did these?
Yes.
Oh, but she'll be getting stern words.
Yeah. yeah, it's... a hint I could give is that it's also... The word is also, like, a completely different thing. Well, it's not a different thing, but, like, it's also...
Well, the word is...
a hamper or something.
No. You want to try and rob a
hammock?
A gondola.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Last one. Which dog is named after an American or sorry, a Mexican state? Which dog is named after a Mexican state?
Oh, this is my one, is it? Is it mine?
Yeah, it's yours.
I want to guess here, and I don't know if it's a state in Mexico, but Chihuahua.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Right, so
I'm guessing these.
Right, so hang on. So let's go through the first one that we got right with the 7. You got the 7 for basketball, didn't you?
Yeah.
And that was your question, wasn't it?
I think he's on 4.5. To be honest, doing quite well.
Then you got ET, so that's 1-1. Then you got the Sao Paulo one, which is 1.5 to 1. Then you got Cologne, which is 1.5 to 2. Then you got the dice, so it's 3.
No, Cologne was my one.
Yeah,
so he got 1.5, 1.5. And then he got the dice, which is 2.5 to 1.5. Then he got...
No, dice was mine, so it's 3. So I got...
No, but it was 2.5, 1.5. And then he got Pacific Ocean, 3.5, 1.5. And then that one there.
And then the Kuna.
No one got.
No one got. The gondola one no one got. And the Chihuahua you got.
So 4.5 to 1.5.
4.5 to 1.5.
Annihilated.
What's the...
Take a day off, bomb.
So
give me this one.
Probably just take away the steel ones if it's...
So, what the last one is now, right, is I'm going to play 10 seconds of this song.
Okay.
And
let's hear this stuff on the radio.
So if you wanna, okay,
this is brain it.
So I've only two songs here. So if you wanna rock paper scissors on who takes the first one.
Do you wanna take the first
one? Take the first one. Okay, you ready?
Not
a
clue.
Yeah, it is.
I you went first. I don't know what that is. I don't even know what band or like what's
Codeline.
Codeline.
Yeah, it's the Jeez, one by Codeline.
What are you doing, Codeline?
Mate, that's just the okay. And then
I'm sure like this is gonna be a
blatantly obvious one. I love it was like one. The intro to a techno song.
I love it was. I think it's gonna be a blatantly obvious one. That
play new John Dance.
Right. One sec. I just need to lower down the volume so I can pick into the middle of it. Are you ready?
Go on.
I don't know the name of it either. Oh.
What do you think?
I'm not gonna get the name. I'm definitely not getting the name for this one.
Oh,
it's really annoying me as well.
I know.
I'm not gonna get the name for that.
No. But do you want to try?
New shoes.
It is new shoes.
Yes.
Alright, so that's two.
Yeah, there's always
plenty of stories. That's a steal, so two and four.
Four and a half.
Two and four. That's pretty decent. Yeah. What did you get the last time? Two and a half, was it?
Two or something. It was bad. Like I remember there were a few similar range. That kept me up. A few of those questions. Yeah. What was the one on the shoelace? Sorry, we should finish.
Oh, Castle.
Yeah. That's I'm never going to forget that.
Yeah.
No lads, fucking thanks a million for coming.
Cheers, thanks for coming
on today. And I think we're going to overextend a thank you to everyone who's donated.
Yeah, massive thank you.
It's been insane the amount of donations across everyone that we knew and didn't even know. So it's been an amazing journey and yeah, let's road to 50k.
100%. Best of luck.
Thank you.
And one last thing is, Brian, I actually still can't believe you did that fucking thing and try not to do something like that again because you're gonna fucking die.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, I've another couple of podcasts coming up in the next couple of weeks, so hopefully you'll enjoy them, and until then, cheers.